Hello?
Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
It's a show!
It's showtime!
It's showtime!
Welcome back to Death, a Funny Business.
Woo! With Becky Briggs
and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
That's me. If you love true crime, if you love autumn, if you love Stevie Nicks, if you love cats.
I don't think any of those things are on the show.
If you love gravediggers.
If you love gravediggers and music and relationship advice.
Absolutely. And dealing with grief and bereavement and crying into your pillows late at night when you're just missing your loved ones.
And laughing at the same time. Then you're going to have a great, great time.
Yeah, you are. Welcome to Death Funny Business. At the end of the day, we're here for you.
So what have we got coming up today then?
We have lots coming up today.
We have Maria, a gravedigger.
The only female gravedigger.
The only female gravedigger.
In the UK. Which is pretty darn cool, if you ask me.
We're excited to talk to her. Then we've got Jarky Mono, a singer-songwriter.
Ooh,
from Brighton,
who,
I believe.
I have to admit, made me cry a little bit earlier. I did listen to some of his songs, and I was like...
You well up. You well up.
I was on my way here, and I was like, oh, I don't want to do this today.
Oh, dear. I'm excited.
I'm excited, too.
And then we have Sarah Davison. And she is a breakup coach.
Oh.
I feel like I have so much to divulge and I don't know how much I should divulge here, but I'm really excited to speak to her as well.
She is needed. We need her. I think the two of us.
I think we need her every day. I think I need her every day.
I do have something to tell you later.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe I should tell her now.
No,
Becky,
save
I kissed
it.
A boy. I kissed a boy.
I really
on
really
the weekend.
Want to,
I did it. I'm so excited.
No, you're going to speak to Sarah about that.
I think we should.
I think we should,
talk
about that.
Talk about my kissing of men.
Let's do it.
It's important.
We'll have to circle back to that.
I think we should.
But let's introduce Maria.
FUBAR Radio.
Next up, we have Maria Brancati, who is a gravedigger.
Ooh.
A gravedigger, but the only female gravedigger, I believe.
In the
one
UK.
Of the only in her local authority. And also one, which I didn't even know this was a thing, but won the Gravedigger of the Year 2022 at the Good Funeral Awards.
That's so cool.
Yes.
I did not know that there are awards for good funerals.
I didn't either.
That's pretty cool too.
This is pretty cool. So hi, Maria.
Hi.
We have quite a lot of questions for you.
Mm-hmm. Lots.
Yes.
You've really led such an interesting life, Maria. A chef, graphic designer, artist, gravedigger, and now prison guard.
Yeah, it's a dysfunctional nervous system.
We can relate.
Welcome.
No,
you're
welcome.
In safe hands, Maria.
You
Great.
Are.
Okay.
We're going to have to just dive straight in and ask, you know, what made you decide to become a gravedigger?
Oh, I don't think I decided. It just sort of happened. I was working for the local authority as an area care operative. So I was looking after the gardens in one of our cemeteries, and a job came up for a gravedigger. And I applied for it. And the rest is history.
Huh. What does a gravedigger do?
Yeah.
Sounds silly. But do you have like a digger? I don't know.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid.
Is it by hand?
Yeah, we dig by hand. We dig with a JCB or a mini digger. We look after the cemetery grounds as well. We bury bodies, but we also bury ashes. And we're also trained as crematorium technicians, or I was, and my teammates were as well. So, yeah, we do lots of different things.
What's a crematorium technician?
Somebody who works in the crematorium and burns bodies.
So you were actually burning the bodies?
Pressing the button.
Yeah.
Wow, pressing the button. Wow.
Goodness
me. Yeah, we got trained during COVID because obviously we didn't want our lads to go down with anything, and if they did, then we needed to be there to help them out.
Of course, of course. What was your day like as a gravedigger? What was the kind of...
Is it 9 to 5?
Well, it could be anything. We could be burying maybe 2 to 3 people in one day. So we have 5 cemeteries to look after.
Hmm.
So we could be burying in one cemetery and then going to another cemetery. So it would be digging the grave, then waiting for the funeral to occur, then backfilling the grave, You know, then looking after the cemetery grounds themselves, dealing with bereaved people, you know, lots of different things.
Did you ever get nervous doing your job? Did you ever find that you ever got like spooked out in a graveyard, or got like nervous having to look after or support people who'd had bereaved, like who were grieving at the time?
Yeah, I think you know, you're looking after people at a really obviously vulnerable time in their life, and when somebody's grieving, you know, you see that sort of rainbow of emotions, and people can be sometimes quite aggressive. Other times, you know, you're there as a shoulder to cry on. So, we, even though we're sort of in the background, we're actually not. We're actually talking to people on a daily basis when they come in to visit the loved ones. And, you know, we always get asked questions and try to help out as much as possible, really.
Yeah, that's pretty tough and like a difficult job to have. What? How long did it kind of, and it sounds really silly, but how long does it take to make a grave? Like the whole process from, I don't know, picking up the
digger
spade, I was about to say the digger and
spade.
That's been too much. The digger and the whole process of that.
It can depend on what kind of grave you dig in. I mean, if you're digging a fresh grave for two people to go into, which is like a 6-foot grave, obviously it's going to take longer because you're having to excavate 6 foot worth of soil out of a grave, and depending on whereabouts that grave is, what the soil is like, whereabouts in the cemetery it is. If you're doing it by hand, it can take, you know, many hours. If you're doing it with a digger, it can take, you know, maybe a couple of hours to do it.
Wow.
And once you've dug it with a digger, then you have to get into the grave and finish the grave off by hand. So it's not just a simple process of just, you know, digging a hole in the ground and putting the coffin in.
Yeah, that's a lot of strength. You've got to have a lot of muscles for that if you're kind of
Would you say that you're quite strong from grave digging?
It is a very physically demanding job, and especially, you know, in the winter as well, because you're dealing with, you know, lots of water and graves digging up and sorts of things, so filling up with water and all kinds of things. But yeah, it is physically demanding and mentally and emotionally demanding as well.
How did you look after yourself when you found it was more mentally demanding, like than an average day or something like that?
I just sort of, I like to walk, I like to sort of read and listen to music and just sort of those things that would kind of de-stress me a little bit. Just, you know, we tended to talk about things if things sort of got to us. We were a good team and, you know, we had each other's backs, so we tried to help each other out, really.
Yeah, I was going to ask that about being a team and stuff, because obviously you being one of the only, you know, female gravediggers, what was that like, you know, having, I don't know, not having that kind of like female camaraderie?
It was difficult at first. I was lucky that the people that I was working with, you know, most of them were really, you know, really helpful and, you know, showed me the ropes and things. You know, I think it's difficult working in a totally male-oriented environment.
Amen.
But yeah, it can be difficult, but I think if you've got good people around you, then it does help.
And what makes you a winner? What makes someone a winner of a Gravedigger of the Year award?
Because
this is really
question.
Interesting to us, because I'd never heard. I think Natasha, you'd heard.
Yeah,
of the
Good Funeral Awards.
The awards, but what? Yeah.
But yeah. How do you end up with a good funeral? How does that get judged?
To be honest, I had no idea that I was actually put forward for it until my boss told me. He'd actually put all of the team forward for the Gravedigger of the Year awards, and I was just lucky to win it, I suppose. I'm not sure what they judged it on, or I think he must have done a really good write up for me to
that's so
for
sweet.
Me to win it.
Have you got a trophy then, or a certificate or something?
Yeah,
I do have a trophy, and it's a little slate coffin.
Is it really? Oh, yeah. Gosh.
That's so great. Was there a ceremony or did they send it to you in the post?
There was a ceremony, but we didn't actually get to go. It was sent to me in the post and it did get a little chipped in the post as well.
Gosh.
Not the slate coffin. Slate coffin.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, thank you so much, Maria. We will let you enjoy the rest of your afternoon. But that was really interesting.
Had such an interesting conversation. Really appreciate you coming on with us.
Never spoken to a gravedigger before. Thank you so much, Maria. And that was Maria.
That was Maria. Maria, what an angel. What a sweet, sweet lady.
Who now works in a prison. I mean, that's kind of a...
She sounds like she's hard as nails. That's all I'm going to say. She's a tough lady.
I know,
tough lady. Like, let's be real. Like, no mucking around there.
No mucking around. Well.
No. Well. Yeah.
Anyway,
pardon the pun.
Should we take a break?
FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back to Death of Funny Business.
We're back.
With?
Oh, me, Natasha Spencer-Levy.
And myself, Becky Briggs.
That's my name.
We are here. We had quite an interesting conversation with a gravedigger.
We did. Actually, a little bit spooked out. Now I know that they're still hand digging.
They're
still hand digging graves, which is quite nice, I suppose. Personal touch.
And to take a turn, we've now got Jarky Mono joining us. And Jarky Mono is a singer-songwriter. Based in London.
Yes, I am, absolutely.
He is, and he is here with us. And kind of, this seems a little bit sad, but because we kind of have to mention it, as it's obviously Death is a Funny Business.
Yeah. That's why you're here, sir.
Okay. This is what I signed up for.
Sometimes I forget that like people do know this, but I just like, feel really
imagine
bad.
Imagine if I didn't know, and I thought it was just music based. It was like, whoa, they're really cutting deep.
Yeah, I'm here to talk about producing. I didn't realize I was talking about my dead dad.
It's just one of those meetings. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Jarky.
No, thank you for having me. This isn't something you get to talk about often, but it's actually I was thinking about this on the way up here. It's because you don't talk about it often, I think it's even more special when you do get to talk about it and reflect on what is seen as such a grey area and grey topic, like reflect on it in a lighter sense and a happier side to it.
And that's kind of what we like to do.
It is.
And I am obsessed with your song Wet Shave.
Yes.
So I feel like, so I've kind of known you for a few years.
Yeah.
But I remember first listening to this song, Wet Shave, and I kind of want to introduce, like, start talking about that first, because that's when I kind of first found out about, you know, I feel like in music, you talk about your emotions, you talk about what's going on in your life. And I was like, oh, he's also, like, lost his dad. Mm. So you lost your dad at six years old.
Welcome to
the club.
Yeah, it was. I'm one of the early ones.
That's well, yeah.
The early ones.
Snap.
Sorry, go ahead, talk about your dad.
No, yeah. He was it's a fucking weird one, because at that age you don't know anything about it. It's just sort of like this father figure for me is there, and then the next minute then he's not. And it's only really with time that you actually sort of grow up, and you're like, at that age I almost have grown up ever really thinking did I ever really have a dad, because it's like for me personally I don't have memories from that age, and it's quite weird growing up to sort of, especially like you say, like when I actually sort of got into doing music and like wanted to write about it, when I actually delved into the core of it, it was like, oh my god, that was a whole part of my life that I've almost just sort of turned a shoulder to.
It becomes kind of normal, doesn't it? You're like, oh, that is just my life. Like my dad said,
it was me, mum and sister. Yeah. That was the entirety of my life. And then all of a sudden, at the start of the song, like I wanted something quite poignant, like a voice clip of him. And it was when going back through like old videos, you're like, shit, this is a whole other part of my life that I've kind of never known about. And
to provide some context, because I realize I just said Wet Shave and everyone's gonna be going like, what is Wet Shave?
it doesn't sound like a song.
That is a song, which, and I sent it to you
talk
earlier.
You through
I?
Shaving.
I'm not gonna. We spoke about this at the top of the show. Christ. I did have a little cry.
Oh, bless you.
I was like, I gotta talk about death later, and then I was like, oh god, I just listened to this song about his dad. It's making me cry.
But it's so raw, the fact that you've used these clips and audio from, you know, like they were like family moments in your home or whatever. And then you've introduced that into the song. I just feel immediately we're kind of stepping into your world and your brain and how maybe, you know, your relationship with your dad. And it's a pretty open thing to do. Mm. And music is, you're exposing yourself to everyone and you're being super vulnerable. Mm. But yeah, talk us through kind of the process and why, yeah, what made you suddenly want to go, I think I'm ready to write about my dad.
I think as a an artist and as a songwriter, it's when you go through something like that, it is a topic that you always just want to tick off. You want to tick that box that you've written a song about that. And and for years, like even on the lead up, there was, it was countless ideas, like, and songs. I have one called Note to Pops, like, which is about, like, the concept of writing a letter on a balloon and letting it off. But it never, like, it never, I almost wanted to make it mysterious. Like, you hear, Wet Shave, and you're like, that's not going to be a song about him grieving his old man in the slightest. And it was, it's a song that I've been trying to write for years, and funny enough, like, it literally came from, I was at my boy's house. We were just about to go out on a night out, and I had stubble, and I was like, cool, I don't look the bollocks going out. I want to freshen up. And I asked, like, do you have an electric razor? He was like, nah, I've only got a clean shaver. I was like, I've never used one of those before. And it was like the whole story, like, he took me downstairs, and my housemate, shout out Cooper, like, he showed me how to wet shave. And it was only really in that moment where I was like, shit, like, this is something that majority of lads on this planet growing up are taught by their dad.
It's like a rite of passage, isn't it? Birds and the bees, and then you get the wet shave.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was just one of those, in that order. Yeah. But it was just one of those ones where it's like, I had to cancel this night out, and it was a shit night out apparently, so I'm quite glad. Because I just ran home and I wrote this song in about 15 minutes. Oh, wow. It all just came to me there.
Were you kind of upset and emotional during that time? Or was it a case of like, oh yeah, finally I can take this box, I found something to write about?
Do you know what? I just sort of got it off my chest and I wrote it all. And the next day I called up my boy Kleinsy and I told him to just put this loop down. And it was only really when I put a real snippet on my Instagram, and it's still on there. It's like 40 seconds of it. And it was only at that point where the amount of other people it touched was like, fuck, that's it. I've got it. Like, that is it. And to this day, like, I feel I'd never have to sort of look back on trying to write something like that again. And it's although afterwards, it's like a lot of people were like, this is the sad grieving boy. We want to get loads more of this music out of him. I'm a happy go chappy. Yeah. I've done that. I want to move on now. And yeah, it was a real whirlwind because it caught a lot of attention, like, on the radio. And it sort of, I had a lot of people come to me and sort of say, like, from all ages, from 18 to like 65 year olds that, like, had never learned how to deal with grief, especially on a parental side. And then they heard this song and was like, thank you. Like, that's it. And I felt almost like a real weight on my shoulders of like, damn, a lot of people are sort of trusting me and looking at me like, this is it. Like, and it was quite hard to sort of, I don't know, almost, I feel like they thought I was this sad boy when I'm not. I'm an upbeat guy. And it was,
it was a whirlwind. And go, oh, actually, no, guys, like, I write much more fun stuff.
Yeah. But can you listen to that as well,
as
please?
Well as, yeah. Still on that train.
Yeah.
No, but I remember my brother found your music. And when was it? Was it 2021, 22? I can't remember when it came out.
It would have been 2019. It was COVID.
Oh my gosh, it was COVID. Yeah, because I was living at home with my brother, and I remember him playing it, and I was like, he would have it on repeat. And I just thought, because I was just, I don't know, it was a really weird feeling, because I just suddenly thought, fuck, like, music is so powerful. Yeah.
Well, it's something that we can all emote with, isn't it? It's something that really makes people viscerally
one of the certainties in life, isn't it? Death and taxes. It's one of the certainties.
Yeah, this is very true. I mean, this is what we're all about at the end of the day. But what was interesting about what you're talking about is, it's like especially for someone who's had a parent who's been dead for so long, and being an artist, there's this pressure and almost like internal pressure to write the thing. Like you have to do it. At some point you're going to have to paint the painting, or you're going to have to sing the song, or you're going to have to write the play or whatever. And I think I completely understand what you're talking about. There's like sometimes, and people are like, you should do that. Why don't you write about what you know? Write about that. And then you're like,
bro, I'm trying out here.
And it feels like such a failed attempt when you haven't quite written what you want
to
write.
Because you have to get it. Like it's a nail on the head thing to then move on and be like, well, I can close that door.
Yeah.
I'm done now. I'm done with that. I've got what I needed out of it. I can move on from that now. 100%. 100%.
Yeah. And there's so many angles to grief, and that's kind of what we talk about a lot on the show. Yeah. But I feel like sometimes when I've been writing, I've been trying to put every single thing into one song, and I'm like, well, no, we need to dissect
this. It's a big area. It's a big space to fill. Yeah, so much. Absolutely.
But I do feel like, personally, I felt like it's quite a cathartic release being able to like talk about it and to go, hey guys, hey friends, hey family, like this is what I've been going through without saying it. You know, it's like gives me an excuse to kind of go, this is why I'm so fucking sad. Yeah. Okay, this is why I'm a bitch sometimes.
Tell you what, it's even funnier to play it live because it's like, happy song, happy song, happy song. But I'm going to talk about my old man out and make everybody in this room cry and then expect to be like, yeah, let's just dance after this as well.
And you
that's
don't want
fine.
That to be the final song either.
No, of course not. Like walking out of a venue and like a passerby is like, why the fuck is everyone crying coming out of that? Like that must have been an awful show.
Do you know what you need to do?
But at the end of the day, can I just say one thing?
What?
At the end of the day, crying is also like the most pure form of like,
oh my god,
like joy together. Like sometimes
absolutely
actually, when you're crying as a group, like when you're crying as a collective, like I watch a lot of theater, I've been to like a lot of gigs and stuff, and like it's that moment where sometimes there are those moments, but actually it's like it's still such a like beautiful thing that's happening, or it's just such an opportunity to like share together. And even if it's like not just dancing, if you're crying as well, it's still completely valid. That
100%. It's like it's exactly it's like perfect. I watched that. Have you seen A Man Called Otto?
Yes. Oh my god.
Oh my god. I was like, I've got to put this on my story. I've got to just like say, please, everyone, watch it, but be prepared because it really is that. And literally, like the next day, I saw like three people like post themselves crying at that film, and I was like, I'm so glad that it's like it's
together.
Just everybody's in it together.
When did you last cry?
Watching that last film. Monday. Last Monday, me and my dog. Well, my dog wasn't crying, of course.
I was.
He understands film and cinematography.
What's your dog called?
Jasper.
That's a good name.
He's
like
an absolute madman, but
what
I love
dog,
that
what
boy.
Dog?
He's a real mix. We got him from the rescue. He's something like 10 different breeds all in one. Oh. Like, and he's going strong. He's like 14 years old, and he's still he's still mental. But no, yeah, me and Jas last week was it was a real. A real moment watching that, and it was on like Anxiety Monday after the weekend as well. Do you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, it's really grey out. I'm gonna watch a really sad film. And
sometimes
just sit
you
here.
Gotta like sit and like
let it out.
It and
let
just...
it out. Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So does that mean we've got no more sad songs coming? No more griefy songs?
Do you question. Know what? It's so like in with my next project. It's like it's a lot more introspective, and. Like, long story short, in the past 2 years, I lost two people that were like father figures to me that filled my dad's shoes, both very unexpected. And
I'm sorry.
It was
grieving all over again.
Yeah, exactly. It's like reopening that box. And I went for a real sort of whirlwind and head spin and really lost myself. It was last August 2023. And yeah, I kind of reopened that door and I got myself into a real mess. But this new music is kind of about the low that I hit in that grieving stage and like having to go through it again. So I touch upon the topic again, but it's a bit more upbeat in that sense, I guess. But yeah, it just shows that like even when you think you've like dealt with it and you've moved on, like at any given moment, It can just like 100%. Come right back up from the depths.
Yeah, that's literally what happened to me last week. I think I've suddenly it was like an epiphany, and I was like, "Fuck!" I thought I had grieved, and then I was like, "I actually haven't."
No, babe. No, babe.
I thought I was fine.
We're like 18, 90 years on. You got time, honey.
But what's that about?
It's the littlest of things, isn't it?
So
like
true.
You can walk past something or like. Yeah. Or you can see someone that resembles like somebody, or like, or smell like a,
smell like
an aftershave or a fragrance. Or...
Mine's like Madeira cake. if I smell or eat
I bet you
Madeira
hate going
cake.
To bakeries. Then.
it's like torture. I'm like, oh god, or like someone makes a really good fairy cake, same
just,
thing.
Like,
I'm
I can like... just picture a baker like handing you over a Madeira cake, and you're just sobbing. Like, thank you so much.
But yeah, no, fair enough. I've got some time to. I don't think it doesn't ever kind of go away, does it?
This
but
is the thing. It's not to scare you. It's just true. Like at the end of the day, like it's with everything. You know, they say time heals everything. It does. Yeah. But at the same time, it also doesn't. You know, it's not like, because I think you can agree that like I'm not crying every day about my mum or anything like that. But there are some days when you need your parent, or you're just like kind of frustrated or whatever. And it can happen in so many ways. And sometimes I go ages without.
I think there's time where like I actually like I almost feel bad for it. There's like, now it's been so long, like there's times where like days where I don't even think about my old man. And I think there's this whole stigma, like especially people like that know my story and what I've gone through, and they're always like, god, that must be so tough. And don't get me wrong, it is at like you say, it is at points, but it's not like a day-to-day thing when you go through, like for me personally anyway, like it's the little reminders, and like it's sort of like you catch a glimpse of a photo in the corner of a living room, it's like, oh shit, yeah, there's dad. But like you don't always have those reminders, and it's of course if it's fresh and it's early, then it is like that. But with time, like I personally don't think it's a day to day thing. It's a sort of every now and again, and an anniversary, or if you're going to see your auntie, such and such, like my dad's sister, like, and it makes. Do you know what I mean?
I always find that really difficult, like seeing my dad's family, like because it feels like he should be there.
Yeah.
And
it's like,
hang on, like this feel, and I don't know how you feel, but I sometimes feel like I bear that. I need to bring his energy to the to the room.
100%,
and I'm like, 100%. Yeah, I have to be like so fine and be as funny as him, and I have all these attributes and talk and stuff, and it's
literally
like exhausting.
That. Literally that.
And I always leave going like, let me just leave really pissed. Like,
just flat out.
I can't.
I hope I did good.
But so it says music for you then. Do you think if your dad hadn't have died, I mean, it's a hypothetical question, but do you think that you would be doing music or not?
I have no. I honestly cannot say.
Yeah,
like it's
such
a weird. My dad was such a charismatic man, and he was like a businessman. He was very much. He was like a door to door in his early years, and he like some of the stories you hear, like I've heard of him, are just how outgoing he was, and he could talk to anyone and everyone, and. It's weird, like for so many years, like especially sort of in my early teenage years, I was like, I'm nothing like him. But as time goes on, like I see so much more of just who I am, like going forward, like damn, I am seeing more and more of that. And in like my family, sort of as I get older, like they sort of start to see more similarities and like reflections in my mannerisms and who I am. And it's I always felt like it was like you have to keep this I had to keep this flame alight for my dad's surname. And I think he wouldn't have wanted me to sort of try and be somebody I wasn't, but it's nice to know that people see those little sort of inklings within myself now that sort of make them think of him as well. And especially for like his family on that side of things. So it's a whirlwind. It's a real, real whirlwind.
Well, I think you're smashing it. I also want to say you just paid BBC Introducing Luton.
Yes.
How was that?
Weekend. Oh, it was crazy. Do you know what? That was like one of the first shows where I decided not to play Wet Shave, because I was like, imagine if passers-by came and were like, god, like it was a sunny day in this big old field, everyone's spirits high. It's like, who the fuck is this guy? everyone's in tears. So I was like, and
that's
there's
not
a time
your brand.
And a place.
That's not your brand, Jockey.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
There's a time
we
and a place.
We get it.
It's not your brand, but it's ours.
Run with it.
Thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you for having me on.
We have a game.
Brilliant.
Do you
I
like
love
games.
I love them.
Do you like games?
Yeah, hit me.
What's your favourite game?
Jigsaw. It's like, it's from Saw. Do you like games?
You're like, you
want to
play a game?
That's it.
We're going to play a game. I'm very competitive. Becky has the questions. I do not have the answers and neither do you. Which means we're
so
going
you think.
Head to head.
Okay, magic.
You should be fine though, because yeah. it's music related.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's guess these songs.
God damn. Just right.
Are you ready?
Competition.
Song number one.
Okay.
And where did I go wrong? I lost a friend. Somewhere
alone. Somewhere alone in the bin. How to Save a Life by... God damn! Oh, sorry, I didn't buzz. Ah! How to Save a Life by... the script? No. The
Coldplay.
Wavy hands.
No. What's that? Knitting. Hair. Strings. Train.
Long strand of hair.
The fray.
Fuck. The fray.
Did that make sense? Oh, you get a point.
Can we get 1 point? Is it 2 points per...
Oh, come on. I've got to get a point for that.
You got a point. Well, let them
me a point.
So you got a song number two.
Okay.
So, I'll sing Hallelujah. You are an angel in the shape of my mum. When I fell down,
Flowers, Ed Sheeran.
He's really good at this.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
But it's like Asda, Sainsbury's.
What?
Supermarket Flowers, sorry.
Yeah. Supermarket.
I was like, why are you rattling off? Yeah. Yeah, sure. But I want to get
going
one free.
For a breakdown at the moment, Jackie.
I haven't listened Nothing to that song sense. In ages.
I know that makes me cry.
Okay, do another one.
2 points. Step up your
I'm
game,
really
Natasha.
Sad. I'm sorry. I'm really trying.
The underdog.
Song number three. It's been a long day without you, my friend, and I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. You've come a long way from where we began.
It's from Fast and Furious.
What?
When I see you again by Charlie Puth.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my.
Wiz Khalifa.
No, I think she should
Big
sing
Wiz.
Them.
Big Wiz.
I'd like her to sing them.
I don't know. There's no auto-tune on this.
Okay, fine.
I realise there's actually some meaning behind the song as well. It was written as a tribute to Paul Walker, who died in a car accident in 2013. And was featured in the 2015 film
yes,
Furious.
Yeah.
Number
five.
Seven.
Seven. Shit.
Whoa. That's really good. You're doing really well.
Is that it?
Nope. We are on...
I want to return.
We're
I
on
be
song
better.
Number.
There, there's
four.
Always a dark horse. We need the dark horse.
You ready?
I don't like this boy.
Yes, I do. I believe that one day I will be where I was, right there, right next to you. And it's hard. The days just seem so dark.
Oh.
It continues, guys. The moon. The
Can
stars,
I get it one more time?
Wait.
From the start.
Yes, I do. I believe
buzzing!
That one.
It's John. It's yes, I do. It's Sam Smith, and
yes?
It's called Stay.
Lay me down.
Fuck.
That's it. Damn.
Can I have 1 point, Yaz?
Apparently, you get a point, Natasha.
Okay,
good. Well done.
I can sing it.
That was
it.
Good.
Just,
that was no, yeah, that was
really,
really
good.
Good. That was
really
very
good.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the
you're
pity.
You're very well.
I appreciate it.
Song number five. I think song number five. I fought for you the hardest. It made me the strongest. So tell me your secrets. I just can't stand to see you leaving.
When you say it like that, I
God,
just
that
know
sounds like a dramatic.
Can
you'd be great
really
at dramatic readings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you do it really? Can you do it really, Dad?
You should have heard my dad's eulogy.
Just.
That's what she said.
Okay, I'll do it again.
Yeah, I need it one more time.
I fought for you the hardest. It made me the strongest. So tell me your secrets. I just can't stand to see you leaving.
Nope.
I have got not a I Scooby.
I got nothing.
I've got now.
Nilch, Zilla,
I've
nada.
Got
Beyonce, Heaven.
Oh, I'm not. Yet.
I don't even think I've heard that.
I don't think I have, and I think we should move on quickly because we're going to upset a lot
of
people.
Yeah. swiftly moving
this
on.
This one you should know.
Okay, well, that's.
Mama just killed a man.
Bohemian Rhapsody, Queen.
I think you should get a point for just making noises.
I didn't. Wait, what?
Yeah,
they were
questionable
dyslexic.
Noises.
I know. Weird.
Just
we have
giving,
a last one.
We're giving Jackie a got... very, very snarky look.
Put the
right,
on.
Come
okay,
on.
One more. You ready?
I'm ready.
You could win, Natasha.
I can't.
Surely I've got... But yeah, I was going to say.
Let's
I'm
just try
leading
and give
the
us some hope.
Right.
Just
no,
you.
No, yeah.
Near,
this is the break.
Wherever you are, I believe.
Buzzer.
Heart...
Buzzer. It's Celine Dion. It's The Heart Will Go On.
Oh, yes. Nice.
I get it.
Woo, woo, woo.
Intense, right? 4-2. 4-2. So 4-2, Jarky.
Okay.
Good game.
I'm not as
good game.
Yeah,
good game.
All right, fine.
Let's see.
Do you want to shake hands?
Yes, let's shake hands.
So we're gonna have to go to a break, but thank you so much, Darkie, for being here. It was really good fun, and it's like lovely to kind of hear about the stories behind the songs, and good luck with all your happy tunes.
Thank you for an amazing platform to talk about such a tough topic. No, yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome. We shall see you soon.
Peace.
Bye. See you after the break.
FUBAR Radio.
We're back. Yay. Death a Funny Business with myself, Becky Briggs.
And me, Natasha Spencer-Levy.
We are sitting here at the moment with Sarah Davison.
We're very excited.
Thank you so much for being here. We're so excited. Yeah. A breakup coach.
We need you.
We need you every day.
And really? Can we keep you in our pocket?
You can. I'm up for that. Jolly good.
We're 20-something year olds, and we are... What's
25,
the word?
24, what are
we? We're traversing the world of men and women who... Leave us.
No, we really are. Okay. And so I didn't even know. I knew that there were the relationship coaches, but I didn't know that there were breakup coaches. So I didn't know. So I went through a breakup about a year and a half ago, not to make this about myself. But from a cheating boyfriend, serial cheater, And I probably could have done with seeing someone like you, but I didn't know that you existed.
Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yes. How did you get into it? What's the story?
Well, it's not really something you dream about doing at school, is it? It's not on the careers board. Oh, shall I be a divorce coach, breakup coach? No, I got into it because I've been coaching for a long time. Mm. And then I was married. And 3 years into my marriage, my son was one. And I discovered literally overnight that my husband, who we worked together, we had 200 staff. We had an office in London, office in Sydney. I discovered that not only did he not want to be married to me, that he was madly in love with someone who was 12 years younger than me.
Ouch.
Stunningly beautiful and pregnant.
with his baby?
Yes. Sarah. Yes. So I was kind of catapulted out of my marriage. I didn't see it coming, and it hit me like a freight train.
Gosh.
So I literally spent 2 months doing all the ugly crying on the bathroom floor that you might be familiar with, being through your own, and phoning my mom at 2 a.m. Or friends that were in America on a different time zone, so they would listen to me. And then I got to a point about 2 months in where I was like, okay, enough is enough now. Mm. I need to find a way through. But there wasn't anything specific for that. You know, somebody who was pregnant, who was living now in the penthouse above where me and my son was living with my husband. Yes.
It sounds like some sort of like cosmopolitan like thing. Do you know what I mean? Like that's horrible. But like you read about it, but you don't really like you don't know anyone that's gone through it.
Yeah.
And that was you.
That was me.
I'm so sorry.
Yes. But it was a great thing because I got to the point where I was like, OK, screw you. Watch this, which is my motto.
I'm using that one.
Yeah, it's empowering, I tell you, it's really empowering. And I was like, okay, I'm going to find my way through. So I just combined my coaching skills with the divorce process I was thrown into and came up with loads of tools and techniques and ways to cope that really helped me. And then I wrote my first book and it became a bestseller overnight, literally. And then the Daily Mail got hold of the retreats I was running, breakup recovery retreats I run. And they called me the divorce coach, and then it kind of took off. And then, you know, it's kind of crazy though, isn't it? That
it is.
There is no, until I came along, there was no help for heartbreak, even though every single person on the planet goes through it at least once.
What, there were no relationship sort of coaches out there?
Well, there were.
I guess not for
there were therapists, but there wasn't breakup and divorce coaching. It didn't exist. So there were no tools. Yeah. Yeah.
And it feels really weird to be like, yeah, congratulations, because you've actually have had to go through a really difficult point to get there. So that must be a bit of a weird feeling to to be in this position, but it's only because of like the shit you've gone through, basically.
But I think that sometimes the greatest pain in your life, always with hindsight, can actually be your greatest gift.
Oh.
And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have the ability now to help, you know, thousands of people around the world with my books, my podcast, all those things that are actually helping people. So actually I see it as a gift because I'm actually happier and stronger than I've ever been.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it is helping people.
When it comes, because obviously we deal with death on our podcast quite a lot. Would you say that, like, what's the correlation between grieving a relationship and grieving a person? Because I know that for me, in breakups and stuff, I felt this very visceral reaction that's almost as intense as I felt when I lost my mum. And I feel like a lot of the times through my therapy and stuff that I've learned, that it's going to feel very close. I just wondered if you had any insight on like things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Not a lot of people know this, but divorce is known as the second most traumatic life experience we go through after death of a loved one.
Oh, wow.
Which is why we go through the same loss cycle. So the five stages of grief, we go through the same stages for a breakup. So again, it's very similar. There's, it's just that you get to watch the person that doesn't want to be in your life anymore. You don't want to be in your life forever, you know, especially if you're attached to them with kids and things like that.
Can you talk us through those five stages quickly? Just
So the first stage is denial. So should I tell you a funny story?
Yes, we love funny stories.
It's funny now, but it wasn't funny at the time.
We love
so
funny stories.
So I've been in our Australia office and come back to our London flat. And I was really jet lagged. And the only way I knew at that time to get over my jet lag was to go for a run. So I went to get my AirPods at the time, like headphones.
Yeah.
And my lip balm, and opened my bedside drawer.
Oh,
now,
no.
My bedside drawer was the one that you kind of had to shimmy down the side of the bed against the curtain to get to the, And in there was a contact lens box.
No.
I don't wear contact lenses.
No.
I opened it up and there was a big eyelash. And I was like, I don't wear false eyelashes either. So at that point, I thought there's something not right here. But I went into denial, which was literally I shut it, put it away, and I didn't tell anybody.
I imagined it.
Because if you talk about it, it becomes more real.
It's real, yeah.
So I was like, okay, I can't process that. I am no way ready to process what this means because I had a sixth sense and obviously there have been some things I was thinking, where is he going? What's he doing? Mm. So I was like, okay, I've been away for 10 days. This is not good. Mm. But yeah, that's the first stage, denial. Second stage, you go into anger.
Mm.
Obviously, you start sort of saying, why are you doing this? And why is this happening to me? And why are you breaking up the family? Then you go into a weird stage, which is bargaining, which is when you kind of want to save the relationship.
God, this is so relatable, it's unreal.
So you do mad things, really, with hindsight.
Yeah, you do.
You try, you sort of turn up with, like, fully made up all the time, and you try and sort of, you ignore really bad
behaviour.
You
turn behavior. Up in the rain, and, you know, you try and make big romantic gestures.
Yes. You send text messages. You do things that probably break your moral code of accepting really bad behaviour. But you do it because, as human beings, we don't like change. So we'd rather stay with what we know, even though that's
comforting.
Really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even if it's really painful and horrible and they're treating you so badly, we'd rather stay with that than not have it because we don't know what not having it really looks like at this stage. So you go through that and then you go into depression. And that's kind of like the bottom of the curb. You know, you might be crying or you might be all cried out at this stage, but you're going through that really sad stage. You want to stay in bed, you don't want to talk to people, you're isolating usually. And then the final stage is acceptance, and that's where you kind of get to the point where you know you don't want them back or you know you're not getting them back, but that actually can keep you stuck. And a lot of people that I see will be stuck in acceptance. It's like, well, I'm done with them, but the future either looks like one of two things normally, either a blank canvas or a black hole.
Yes.
So
I know them.
We have to throw as much colour on the canvas and shine a light into that black hole.
Lovely.
So that people can focus on where they're going. Because if you don't know where you're going, you'll never get there. So you can't move towards something you don't know what it is. So a lot of the work we do as coaches is creating that compelling future. And even if it changes along the way, having something that... Because your future's taken away if you're not with that person. And I guess with death as well, that person isn't there anymore.
Which is navigating life after loss, right? It's just trying to work out what to do. I was like serial dating after. Is that a common thing?
Yes. I think you either go one of two ways. You do.
I'm the opposite. I'm like, oh, this is never going to happen again. And I like literally do not engage with another person for like a year and a half. That's why I told you I kissed a boy on Saturday, because it's like genuinely
that is huge. I didn't give that enough attention.
For me, that's like such a big thing. Like I kissed a boy. Not that that's important. It doesn't really matter. But the actual concept of me kissing a boy is like a big deal, because I was like, I did a good job. Yeah. I was brave.
Yes.
Exactly. Turns of the spectrum there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, turns of the spectrum. But that's okay, because there's no, you know, it doesn't matter. No. But, you know, getting back out there is a good thing. But I always say we need to do it with safety nets. Like, what a lot of people do is jump into a new relationship just to get that love and connection. Because did you know that's the number one human need we all have? Love and connection. We will do anything for that. So
it's like crack.
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
I believe it is.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I believe it is. And I think we will do anything for that. So quite often we'll jump into a new relationship. But, you know, most of my clients will turn up with two criteria for a new partner. They have a pulse and they show them at least one sign of affection. And then they go into what I call limpet mode, where they sucker themselves to this poor person thinking, I'm never going to be lonely again because you're here now. But that isn't really taking the time to work out what you do want, which is part of the work that we do, is to kind of help you work out what you do want. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, 5 must not haves.
Ooh. Okay, I like these.
Ooh. Go. Can you give us yours? Is that
yeah,
you, no, or we could do our own? I don't mind, but can you just give us some examples?
Yeah, well, some people will be like, well, I don't want them to say do drugs, or don't want them to be selfish, or I don't want them to be rude to other people, or lie, or maybe have kids, or be lazy, or whatever.
So they're like non-negotiables.
Non-negotiables.
But these have to be absolute non-negotiables. I like green eyes, or they must speak French, or they've got to have a nice car. It's real non-negotiables. And I always say, if any of these flags, and you can have up to 5, if any of them show up,
you're done.
You deploy your parachute and you exit the building with immediate
really
effect.
That seems quite drastic.
Yes, but otherwise,
I kind of agree with you.
Yeah, because otherwise we repeat the same patterns, right? You just go round and round again. We are, especially women, we say, oh yeah, he didn't mean that. The fact that he's told me he's a bit selfish on date one, he's telling me that because he's really open, in touch with his emotions. He'll change. I can change him. He hasn't met me yet. When he's in with me, he's going to be different.
Yeah.
He's so nice. I can definitely change him.
That is, you just read me for filth there. I'm going to tell a funny story now quickly. I went on a date a while ago and I was like really vibing with this guy and I was like, this is great. Like we're like laughing. We're having the best time. Everything's great. And then we left the pub that we were at and we went and got food and stuff. And while we were there, he had this interaction with this drunk guy and he just got really weird. And then as we left, I was like, that was really weird. Like, why are you being funny? He was like, I just think people like that are pathetic. And I literally, like, my whole thing, I was like, oh no. And it was like, my non-negotiable came up. I was like, I was like, you are like, you don't know this person. Why are you being so mean? I was like, that's my non-negotiable, meanness to strangers.
Yeah,
that's one of mine.
It's a good one.
Because it's like when someone's mean to a waiter, they say get out, don't they?
Yeah.
So that was me. I was like, I'm done here.
Not morally aligned there at all.
Absolutely not. I was like, he seems like he's pretty harmless. He was just saying hello, and I told him we went to a funeral, and my date didn't laugh. Anyway,
see, what's a common myth about breakups that you'd like to debunk?
That it takes a long time to get over them.
Ooh. Oh. That's interesting. Tell us more.
Everyone's always told me 1 year.
Yeah, that's the myth that we want to debunk,
Please, let's do it now because I'm like the queen of that. Please.
Well, okay, so people ask me, the most common question I get asked is, when will I start feeling better? When will this stop hurting, Zara? And the answer is always, when you decide. Because we all control how we feel. We all have the remote control to our own brains, but most people don't know how to use it because we're not given the manual when we're born that says, right, to dial down negative emotions, do this. But you can dial down negative emotions. You can stop the pain, but you have to choose. It's that screw you, watch this moment where you say, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore for me. What I want to do is do things differently, think differently. I'll give you some tips of how to do it, okay? It's easy saying don't do it, but this is how
I was going to say, because I like to have done that, but I don't think I've processed the processing part. Surely that comes into play.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a magic wand that comes in instantly. I'm like, woo, but it takes time. But these are the tools to use it. First of all, you need to surround yourself with people that make you feel good. And you guys have got that down. So that's great. So you've ticked that box. Secondly, take control of the questions in your head. So what is the question that you ask yourself about this person?
Oh.
Why have you done this to me? Why don't you love me anymore? Why can't I make this work? What's wrong with me? They are what I call hamster wheel questions because they take you round and round in circles and never take you anywhere. And did you know that your brain has to come up with an answer if you ask it a question? Has to. Cannot not come up with an answer. So, okay, should we play a game?
Yeah.
What I want you not to think of the answer to this question. Okay. So we'll test it out.
Uh-oh.
Don't think of the answer, but what is the capital of France?
I don't know.
Your brain has to go think it.
I know what it is. Yeah. It's Paris. I have to say it out loud. Is it? Yes.
Yes.
Is it? I was scared.
But that's the thing. Your brain has to think of it to then not think of it. You can't just not do something. So if you ask yourself a question, a disempowering question, like, what's wrong with me? Why don't they love me? Your brain goes, oh, goody. Right. A good question.
Feel this negativity.
Let's give you the answers. It'll come up with things. It may not be the right answer, but it will give you answers. What we want to do is take our power back and ask a more empowering question, like, what can I do right now to make myself feel better? Mm. So those taking control of what's going on in your head really helps, and being consciously aware. And then physically moving. A lot of people want to stay in bed, eat crisps, not go out, watch Netflix. Mm-hmm. We need to get out. That's we need me. To force ourselves out of our comfort zone. Mm. So, I mean, there's lots more tips, but those are some that will help.
Mm. Sara, I wish we could have you here, like, forever. I feel like this is not long enough because I'm going to have to wrap up. But
sad.
Please come back.
I would love to come
and
back.
You we'll might have to become, like, some kind of integral segment where we're like, and Coach Sara's coming in because we've had a breakdown
have
today.
Issues, yeah. There are just always breakdowns in my life. I feel like my life is like a...
Baby, we're all the
TV
same,
series.
Honestly.
But no, that was absolutely fascinating. And it was kind of actually, felt a bit triggering, you saying all those things. Mm. I was like, I did feel like that, but I hadn't really thought about it like that. So I'm going to go and ponder tonight. And I'm going to tell my brain nice things.
Good.
Thank you, Shad.
And thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. Loved
it. Thank you, Sara. You're an angel.
Uh-huh. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Death of Funny Business with myself, Becky Briggs, and...
Natasha Spencer-Levy. We're going to go now.
We're going to go now.
We love you guys.
What are we going to go and do?
I'm going to go home because it's my mum's anniversary tomorrow. Shout out to mummy. You've been to dead for so long.
Let's unpack that next week.
We will.
Natasha.
Love you so much, Becky. I love my Tuesday with you.
I love you. I love Tuesdays.
Happy Tuesday.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.